Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sally, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Pason Systems Inc. First Quarter Results Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. The contents of today's call are protected by copyright and may not be reproduced without the prior written consent of Pason Systems Inc. Please note that the advisories located at the end of the press release issued by Pason Systems yesterday, which describe forward-looking information. Certain information about the company that is discussed on today's call may constitute forward-looking information. Additional information about Pason Systems, including the risk factors relevant to the company, can be found in its annual information form. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to Marcel Kessler, CEO and President. Please go ahead, Mr. Kessler.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Pason's First Quarter 2016 Conference Call. With me here in Calgary is Jon Faber, our Chief Financial Officer. I will start with a high-level overview of first quarter performance and our outlook. Jon Faber will dive into the details of our financial and operational performance, and we will then take any questions. Pason's performance during the first quarter was solid in the context of our industry. However, demand for drilling services and technology worldwide was dismal for the period. Pason's revenue for the quarter was down 54% from the previous year. A further steep reduction in drilling activity was the main driver of the decline. Drilling industry activity decreased 61% in the United States and 56% in Canada. Drilling activity in North America is now at the lowest point since the 1940s. Activity in international markets also declined considerably. The company incurred a net loss of $10.9 million for the period. This includes restructuring charges related to staff reductions and office consolidations. Over the last 12 months, the Pason workforce has been reduced by 350 people, or 38% of the total. Total annual run rate expenses have been reduced by over $60 million since the first half of 2015. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $8.8 million, and free cash flow was $4.9 million. On March 31, 2016, our cash position stood at $176 million. There is no debt on our balance sheet, and we are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 17 cents per share. I am turning briefly to our outlook. As you know, the industry is in the deepest crisis in generations. Despite the recent recovery in oil prices, we expect conditions to worsen for Pason in the next few quarters. Drilling activity may be further reduced in all geographies. Pressure on pricing and product usage continued as operators seek further cost reductions from service companies. It is possible that we will lose market share in this environment as some competitors are currently offering extremely low pricing. Also, successful commercialization of new products and services is very challenging at the current time. However, our medium-term outlook is more optimistic. We do operate in a highly cyclical industry, and the current slump will not continue forever. The rebalancing of the oil markets is accelerating as the steep E&P capital expenditure reductions are finally starting to have an impact. The oversupply situation could be over in early 2017, and solid growth may return to the industry in 2018. We believe that North American land drilling will be quickest to respond. For the remainder of 2016, we aim to strike the optimal balance between cost control and investments in future growth to be well positioned to maximize returns in the industry's eventual upturn. Our objective is to continue to generate positive free cash flow before the dividend and excluding restructuring costs, while holding on to our position as the service provider of choice for key operators and drilling contractor customers. We plan to continue to allocate resources for R&D and IT, and we intend to spend up to $30 million in capital expenditures in 2016. We are focusing our development efforts on products and services that create significant and visible value, either by saving costs or by increasing revenues for our customers. We will continue to build on our strong market position and reputation and seek opportunities where we can take advantage of our significant strengths. We thank all our customers, partners, shareholders, and employees for their continued support during these challenging times. I am now turning the call over to John Faber for a more detailed look at the financials.
Thank you, Marcel. Consolidated first quarter revenue of $45.8 million was down 54% year-over-year from $99.4 million in the first quarter of 2015, and down 23% sequentially from the fourth quarter of 2015. Significant declines in drilling activity in each of our major operating regions was the primary driver of the revenue declines. EBITDA for the first quarter was negative $350,000, down $44.5 million from EBITDA of $44.1 million in the first quarter of 2015, and down $21.1 million sequentially from fourth quarter 2015 EBITDA of $20.7 million. Adjusted EBITDA of $8.8 million for the quarter was down 79% from $41.7 million in the first quarter of 2015, and down 57% sequentially from $20.2 million in the fourth quarter. I would refer you to the summary of quarterly results in our MD&A for a reconciliation of EBITDA to adjusted EBITDA. During the quarter, the company booked restructuring charges totaling $10.9 million. Of this amount, $6.1 million related to staff-related costs, while $4.8 million related to non-cash charges related to lease obligations and leasehold improvements written off associated with the decision to consolidate our Golden, Colorado office to Houston, Texas, which we expect to complete in the third quarter of 2016. The majority of our restructuring efforts were enacted late in the first quarter. As such, few of the run rate effect of these changes are reflected in the first quarter results, and much of the savings will begin to be realized in the second quarter of 2016. Depreciation and amortization expense in the first quarter of $16.4 million compared to $21.7 million in the first quarter of 2015 and $19.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. The company recorded a net loss of $10.9 million for the first quarter of 2016, driven largely by restructuring charges incurred during the period as the company took further action to adjust its cost base to reflect our expectations of a continued challenging operating environment in the short to medium term. On a per share basis, the net loss equated to 13 cents per share, compared to net income of 17 cents per share in the first quarter of 2015, and a net loss of 1 cent per share in the fourth quarter of 2015. Stock-based compensation of $962,000 in the first quarter, compared to a recovery of $1.8 million in the prior year period, and an expense of $2.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. As a reminder, prior to the amendment to the stock option plan ratified by shareholders at the last AGM in May 2015, the company accounted for its stock-based compensation related to options on a mark-to-market basis. As such, the historical period expense was significantly impacted by movements in the company's share price during the period. I'll begin with a review of the segmented results with our U.S. business unit. First quarter revenue for the U.S. business unit of $23.6 million represented a 59% year-over-year decrease from $57.5 million in the first quarter of 2015 and decreased 32% sequentially from $34.7 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. The revenue decline was consistent with a 61% year-over-year decrease in industry activity from the first quarter of 2015 and the effects of continued pricing pressures experienced in the services sector. Quarterly operating income of $1.6 million was down $21.2 million from operating income of $22.8 million in the first quarter of 2015 and decreased $9.5 million sequentially from $11.1 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. The Canadian business unit posted first quarter revenue of $15.8 million, down 46% year over year from $29.4 million in the prior year period, and down 4% sequentially from fourth quarter 2015 revenue of $16.4 million. Industry activity decreased 56% in the quarter as compared to the first quarter of 2015. The Canadian business unit posted an operating income of $2.9 million in the fourth quarter, compared to $10.2 million a year ago and down $976,000 sequentially from $1.9 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. Our third segment is our international business unit. International revenue for the first quarter of $6.4 million was 49% lower than $12.5 million in the comparative period of 2015 and 27% lower sequentially compared to fourth quarter 2015 revenue of $8.7 million. Decreased activity in each of our major international markets and a significant devaluation of the Argentinian peso in December 2015 contributed to a decrease in the revenue for the quarter. The international business unit had an operating loss of $1.2 million in the quarter, compared to operating income of $1.5 million in the first quarter of 2015 and an operating loss of $705,000 in the fourth quarter of 2015. Finally, I'll briefly review capital expenditures in the balance sheet. Capital expenditures of $6.6 million in the first quarter of 2016 was down 72% from $23.5 million in the prior year period and essentially flat sequentially as compared to fourth quarter 2015 capital expenditures of $6.5 million. We expect to spend up to $30 million on capital expenditures, including capitalized R&D and IT investments in 2016. At March 31st, we had positive working capital of $215 million. Our cash balance at March 31st stood at $176 million, down from $196 million at the end of 2015. While the company realized $4.9 million in free cash flow during the quarter, our cash balance declined as we paid $14.3 million in dividends to shareholders in the quarter and saw a negative $10.2 million translation effect to our cash balance related to the strengthening of the Canadian dollar at the end of the first quarter. There's no debt on the balance sheet, and we are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 17 cents per share. And at this point, we would be happy to take any questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Ian Gillies with First Energy. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Ian.
Are you able to talk a little bit about the run rate cost savings and how you think they're going to be allocated across the various, cost lines, whether it be G&A or R&D and cost of goods sold?
So, obviously, from the perspective of the people costs, we've talked in the past, Ian, about relatively sort of the employee base being a third, a third, a third between field, corporate, and R&D. And, you know, overall, the restructuring charges we would have incurred over the last 12 months would be fairly reflective of that split.
The only other thing we can probably say here, so I highlighted an overall run rate OPEX cost saving of about $60 to $65 million since the first half of 2015. About half of those would be baked in to date. The other half, also another $30 to $35 million, would have not been reflected in the Q1 numbers. But we can't give you the breakdown by line at this point.
No, Marcel, that's what's very helpful, and don't worry, John, you're helpful too. So that's good. From a pricing standpoint, you noticed you guys noted that it's getting incrementally competitive in the U.S. Are you able to just expand on that a little bit about what you're seeing, and maybe if there's specific regions that are more challenging than others?
I don't think we see much of a difference by region. In the U.S. specifically, much of the drilling activity is really now focused on the southern U.S., so primarily Texas and Oklahoma. Many other regions have obviously declined significantly over the last 12 months. In terms of the behavior, as you know, we have always been the premium-priced offering. That hasn't changed. Our competitors have always offered a somewhat lower-cost offering. I think what we have seen here more recently is just, in some cases, extremely low pricing of 50% or below our price points.
Okay. And I guess just a little further on the pricing, how much do you think it was down in the U.S. quarter over quarter, and how much do you think it's down from the peak at this point?
So we actually decided going into this call for competitive reasons that we are not going to disclose our pricing approach or concessions anymore.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it there, guys, and I'll turn it back over. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ian.
Your next question comes from the line of John Morrison with CIBC World Markets. Your line is open.
Morning, all.
Morning, John.
Hey, John.
Marcel, in regards to your comments about potentially losing market share in the coming period, is that based on your tracking of your tracking of market share over the last few months, what customers are signaling that they're ultimately going to take a lower priced option, or just a high level expectation that if you hold pricing firm, it's logical that you'll lose some customers here and there?
I think it's more the latter. I don't think we have any specifics. I don't think there's specific customers that have indicated that they were going to switch or anything like that. I think it's more the fact that we are not willing and able to give the extreme discounts that some of our competitors have been willing to go.
Do you believe the stickiness of the product has changed in the last 3 to 6 months versus what it's been over the last, call it, decade?
I don't know whether the stickiness has changed fundamentally, but the rig counts are so low that just losing a few rigs can move the needle materially on market share here.
Okay. John, just to follow on Ian's question, are the cost reductions that you made at the tail end of the quarter astronomically different than what you previously messaged in your Q4 results, or we should be thinking about all your comments from last quarter kind of holding on a go-forward basis?
So the numbers we would have referenced in the Q4 are fairly consistent with what we would have seen with the reductions late in the quarter. I think in a couple of areas we were probably able to find a little bit more savings through some of our purchase costs. You know, we talked about the purchase costs in the employee side. I think we were able to find a bit more in the purchase cost side, but fairly consistent with what we talked about in the first quarter call.
Okay. Maybe it's my imagination, but I can't help but notice you guys are referencing non-oil and gas revenue more in the quarterly releases. Is that a function of Pason growing its footprint in that market share, or just being more relevant with the fall off in oil and gas?
It's probably more a nature of just how small the rig count is, particularly in the Canadian market. There'd be a very small number of rigs that would do some things not directly oil and gas related, and that becomes a bigger percentage of the mix as you sort of get to these very, very, very low rig counts in the oil and gas space.
Okay.
It's not really a shift of direction. It's just a shrinking of the oil and gas drilling specifically.
John, do you have an idea of what we should be thinking about you spending on R&D all in this year, including both expensed and capitalized items?
I think if you looked at what we spent in a 2015 type of environment, you would expect that sort of on a year-over-year basis, we should be down somewhere in the order of 15 to 20%.
Okay. Last one just for me. I'm wondering if you can give a little bit more color on the rationale to hold the dividend at this stage. I realize that you guys have lots of capacity given your cash on the balance sheet, but is there any consideration to the fact that that'll decline in both 2016 and perhaps 2017 based on what you're paying out and what what the mindset is on maintaining a cash balance as high as you guys have traditionally have in the past.
So you're right, obviously, John. The current dividend level is not sustainable in the long term if the activity levels and the operating environment does not improve. So it is a question of time as to when we will have to reduce. Now, I think in the short term, we have more cash than we need. So it doesn't really affect our ability to operate and have sufficient funds to fund the upturn and the required working capital injection at that point. And secondly, we have a number of large, very loyal, long-standing shareholders on the institutional side, especially, who very much value the dividend.
Okay. Is it fair to assume that the M&A opportunities that you guys are reviewing wouldn't be of a scale or size that it would force you to ultimately have to make a choice one versus the other?
I think I wouldn't say that. I think the opportunities can come in a large range of sizes. I think at the upper end of the range, I think the cash balance would not be sufficient to fund the acquisition anyway. So I think we'd have to look at alternatives there. On the low end, yes, clearly we can do small tuck-ins. There are no restrictions around that.
Okay. Appreciate the color. I'll turn it back, guys.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And your next question comes from the line of Elias Vaskolis with Oak Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Morning, Elias.
One question towards you, John, and one for Marcel. John, could you give some color approximately on the percentage of cash on the balance sheet that's in U.S. dollars versus Canadian dollars?
We've typically held the vast majority of the cash in the U.S. and U.S. dollars. So that number sort of fluctuates, but I would say it's generally anywhere from, call it 70 to 85%. That would be U.S. dollars.
Okay, thanks. Marcel, talking about the pricing pressure, I didn't really see that in the Q1 numbers. Is that sort of a late Q1 or into Q2 type phenomena that you're seeing? If you could add some color on that.
So there's not a single line item or number in here that would reflect pricing pressure. Right? If you look at the developments in revenue per EDR day, the declines year over year have been modest. It's a combination of three things, though. It is pricing pressure on existing line item. It is either stripping or cannibalization of existing products, but it's also the introduction of some new products and new revenue generation around that, that there was a little bit of that. So you have three effects factoring into that number, and we don't break those out separately.
Okay. That's it for me. Thank you very much for the color on both those questions.
Thanks, Elias.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to Mr. Kessler.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. Have a nice day.
Thanks very much, and we'll look forward to seeing some of you this afternoon at our AGM at the Pason office at 3:30.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.